We've got WPR's assistant news director with us in studio to talk about what's making headlines in Wisconsin this week. Hey, Noah.
Good afternoon.
So what caught your eye this week?
That's a very good question. From a news perspective, I wouldn't say it was a slow news week, but it certainly wasn't necessarily a busy one. We did get our latest job numbers for the state of Wisconsin, and this would have been for the month of March. And it had some encouraging news, actually, for the state. According to the Department of Workforce Development, the private sector in Wisconsin grew by 6,400 jobs in March. That's good because it's in stark contrast to February when the state lost around 4,000 jobs.
Right. So that's good news. And some more good news in there as regards the unemployment rate, right?
Right. Exactly. That's the real big highlight in this report. According to the DWD, the unemployment rate now stands at 5.9%, which is the lowest it's been in 5 years.
So that's, again, a positive. But as far as Wisconsin stands, I guess, in a bigger contest, in a national context, how do we look?
Right. So the progress would be slow but steady. But as you say, looking at Wisconsin in more of a national context, there's still a lot of room for improvement, frankly. According to the latest, what's called the quarterly census of employment and wages, which is a very accurate sort of survey of jobs that's released by the federal government, that showed that Wisconsin is ranked 35th in the nation for job creation. So quite a bit of distance to cover yet, although our unemployment rate is ticking downward.
All right. And so these are obviously numbers people are watching closely, the economy, the jobs bundled in with that. How do you see that factoring in as we head into election season?
Which we already are in now officially. Make no mistake, jobs are going to be one of the biggest themes we hear both on the air from advertisements from the Governor Walker and from Mary Burke, as well as their supporters. It'll be something they talk about on the campaign trail as well. And so both the politicians, their campaigns, the public certainly will be looking at these job numbers over the course of the summer and will influence, I think, the direction and certainly the tone of the campaigns.
All right. And speaking of Governor Walker and Mary Burke, there's some news, at least from the Governor Walker campaign. He's on the move.
Right. Drum roll, please. Governor Walker officially began his reelection campaign, this week, officially kicked it off with a statewide tour a little bit earlier on this week.
So a statewide tour, do you know where he went first?
He started out in Dane, and where he talked about, which is in Dane County, which he talked about the fact that he cut property taxes during his first term. He wasn't too specific about what he was going to do if he was reelected, but he did lay out some general ideas like property taxes and also, of course, touted his record.
Tell us more about what his message is so far. We know about some things he didn't say. We'll get to that in a bit. But what does he seem to be running on so far?
Sure. So he's running on his record, and there are several key themes that he struck the day that he officially launched his campaign, as well as, you know, repeatedly over the course of his term, which is he's lowered property taxes. He, according to the governor, has cut the state budget deficit. He froze tuition at UW and just recently announced that he was going to propose another tuition freeze at UW. And more broadly, he's arguing that the economy has improved under his watch. He said 100,000 new jobs were created since he took office. He said that during his campaign stops earlier this week.
Now, there was a number he didn't mention. There was this dangling 250,000 jobs.
Yes.
That has been watched by a lot of people. What is he saying or not saying about that?
Right. So this was a promise that he made during his first campaign. And I would say it's probably fair to say that it's haunted him probably since he made that pledge. The governor, when he was initially running, said that he was going to create 250,000 new jobs in Wisconsin by the end of his first term. He's nowhere near that, as I just mentioned. And both his critics and others continually point to the fact that he probably won't make it to 250,000 jobs by the time he's reelected, if he is.
So he's not emphasizing that. He is emphasizing some of the other things you mentioned earlier. And another really interesting I guess, non-statement would be about whether or not he's running for president. I mean, in effect, what's going on there?
Right. So journalists, will ask him from time to time, are you committed to serving out another term if you are elected again? And the governor has said in the past and said again on the very day that he announced his reelection campaign that he wouldn't really answer the question. He didn't commit to fulfilling the full term. And as you mentioned, that's probably because he's believed at least to be considering a run for the White House in 2016.
So we'll be watching that one. Seems like not going to get a solid answer on that, but he's definitely running for governor. That's what we know right now.
We know that for sure.
All right. Well, you've had your eye on some interesting stories that I hadn't caught. This one from Superior.
Yeah. So these are one of the stories that sometimes you pick up on in the unlikeliest of places. And this was an interesting story that Mike Simonson found as he was going through the city council agenda in Superior. And he found that the city of Superior, and in fact several other communities in Wisconsin, have applied for or are receiving surplus military equipment, something called an MRAP. You have to ask me what
that
is.
What? No, is an MRAP. Describe it.
An MRAP is a heavily armored, literally heavily armored, six-wheeled vehicle. It's officially called a mine-resistant ambush-protected vehicle, and this is something that a few departments have in the state, but more are on the way for cities like Superior.
And these are free, but I guess the question is, why does Superior need an MRAP?
So the first thing that surprised me is it's basically free to these police departments. The Army is basically offering them for free. The departments only have to pick up the bill for transportation. These MRAPs are stored right now at a depot in Texas, so it costs about $5,000. But these things cost $1 million off the line. So,
and they're how old are they? Do we know?
6-7 years old, maybe a little less. This was equipment that was developed. I wouldn't say hastily, but it certainly was developed very quickly, as far as the Pentagon is concerned, at a time when soldiers in Afghanistan and Iraq were being killed and wounded by improvised IEDs, improvised explosive devices, IEDs. And the Pentagon was looking for a solution to this. And so they created these vehicles and produced them very, very quickly, produced them so quickly and in such quantities that now they have enough apparently to give away essentially for free to police departments around the country, including here in Wisconsin.
So they're in Texas right now.
Yes.
We just have to pay the towns that want them to drive them up here to Wisconsin.
Yeah, right.
And then you've got this heavily armored six-wheeled vehicle.
Right.
In Wisconsin.
That's designed to resist mines.
Exactly. So
and IEDs.
How are police departments in Wisconsin going to be using it? Do we have any idea what they have in mind?
Right. So one of the main reasons why police departments want this is because, unlike squad cars, unlike fire engines and things like ambulances, other things that you see in scenes where there may be gunfire, these are truly bulletproof. And at a time when people have access to, very powerful assault weapons, this will help not only keep officers safe, but police departments argue it also keeps civilians safe because it allows police departments to safely evacuate them if there is some kind of crisis situation. And did I mention, by the way, they're getting a heck of a deal?
Yes, a free is a pretty good deal.
Very good deal, especially for $1 million vehicle.
Wow. Have you looked up pictures of these things?
I have, yeah. They're very...
Are they formidable?
They are formidable. And at least the police department in Superior has said clearly that these things aren't going to be on patrol.
So they're not going to be pulling over speeders.
No, they're not going to be pulling over speeders. They're simply going to be used in crisis situations.
All right. Well, that's an interesting development. And I'm interesting to catch a sight of one if you see one driving.
Yeah, an MRAP possibly coming to a community near you.
Okay. And coming to a community near us in Milwaukee, a couple of new owners for the Bucks.
Yeah, so in sports news, former Senator Herb Kohl announced this week he was selling the Milwaukee Bucks to two hedge fund managers from New York City.
And who are these guys? What do we know about them?
Right. So their names are Wes Edens and Mark Lassery. And according to Cole, he received at least 9 offers for the team. But he settled on these two gentlemen for a price tag of $550 million.
9 offers. That's pretty good. Do we know anything about why these these two gentlemen, as you said, were selected?
Yeah, I think there's a few reasons. Wes Edens had indicated that he has family connections to Wisconsin. His mother is from here. And he and Mr. Lassery also indicated that Wisconsin is a great sports market in general, which, of course, we know from the Packers it is. And they said that it's a good deal. It's a good value. And Wisconsin is a great place to own a team.
And this has been something that's been in the works for a while. And there's also been the issue of a possible new arena. Do we know about how those things might come together?
Right. So when we talk about the Bucks, we have to talk about this idea of having building a new arena in Milwaukee. And the prospective owners have committed to spending $100 million towards a new arena in Milwaukee. Herb Kohl has committed to spending $100 million. And so I'd say certainly this sale has given that effort to build a new arena, certainly a boost at the very least.
All right. Do you have any sense of how it's going down in Milwaukee?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it still leaves, you know, something like $200 million left to raise for a new arena. And so the question was, and frankly remains, you know, how much, if any of that, is going to be from public money? You know, how much public money is going to be used to build it? And that's still very much an open question, because that $200 million or so needs to be found somewhere.
Somewhere else. So that's some more money that needs to come in before that can be committed to.
Exactly.
So that'll be interesting to watch as well. Do you have any idea about when a handoff might happen, or is a done deal?
Yeah, well, we should say prospective owners,
because
officially the NBA owners still have to approve the sale. All indications are that will happen, and it'll happen in the next few days.
Okay, well, that's something we'll be watching, too. Excellent. Well, thank you for that, Noah. And I'm going to follow up on an early interview that we had. It said about I'm having trouble making conversation, and we're out of time now, so I got to ask you, what kind of car did your parents drive?
The earliest car I can remember was a brown Chevy. I don't remember the model number, but I do remember the second car we had, which was a silver Volvo station wagon. I believe it was a 1986, and it was a great car. I miss it.
See, that was fascinating. They were right. It is interesting to ask people about their parents' cars. I come from a long line of Oldsmobiles, by the way.
Oh, I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah, you're looking at me differently, I know. No judgment, please.
No judgment zone.
All right, Noah, thanks a lot for coming by.
My pleasure, thanks.
We've been talking to Noah Ovshinsky, our assistant news director.